Welcome to Just Wanna Quilt, a research podcast coming out of Tulane University Law School, where we explore all kinds of things, stories about quilting, tools, field trips, maybe some famous quilters stop by, and of course, a little bit of copyright thrown in just for fun. I'm Elizabeth Townsend Guard. I'm a law professor at Tulane University Law School, and I just wanna quilt. Today we're talking to Gigi Bai. She is part of our quilting army. She is fabulous. She works at Uptown Needle and Craft Works here on Magazine in New Orleans. And she is amazing. She makes you feel like you can do anything. I made 3 jackets with her help, and I didn't know how to do making these making jacket things. She's awesome. She's been sewing all her life. She's a quilter. She's so much fun. I hope you enjoy it. All right, so we are, tell me who you are and where are we?
My name is Gigi Bai, and we are upstairs in my sewing studio.
And we're in New Orleans.
We're in New Orleans, Louisiana, yes.
And that's me. And it's one of the first, like, winter's finally arrived, right?
Yes, it's been really chilly.
Which for us is like 30s and 40s.
Right. Okay. Well, we did have snow. Some people, I had ice, but other people had snow.
I know. It was really awesome. All the children went outside for like 10 seconds.
Right. My grandson said they went out twice. And then the teacher said, okay, if it happens again, we're not going back out. So I think it was mostly wet. It wasn't really.
It was just sludge.
Yeah.
Funny. All right. So we're going to talk about your quilting life. But I first want to talk about how we met. So okay. You work at
Uptown Needle and Craft Works on Magazine Street in New Orleans.
And one of the cool things about it is you have a open session where if you're working on something, you can just come and get help and just sew. And
right.
So I showed up one day.
We call it sit and sew.
Sit and sew. And it's great because a lot of places have it, but they actually charge people to do it. Really expensive in New York, like $45 or something to come sew or something. It's ridiculous. Anyway, so I came and you were like magical.
You conquered what you were doing.
I was trying to make, so I only quilt, I don't sew, and you sew. We'll talk lots about your life, but you helped me make 3 very intricate, ridiculous jackets as cosplay for my daughter and her friends.
They were amazing.
And a bond was formed. Like, I just couldn't believe that I could do it. And you were so encouraging and, I mean, I know you've taught sewing for a long time, but there's a skill to it, and it's an art, and not everybody can do it. And you, I got everything in, the zippers and the sleeves and the everything.
And zippers. That was quite exciting.
Really good.
Yes, though, right. I think the sleeves were the most exciting part.
Yeah, because it was really hard. They were really hard. So right. Anyway, so that's where we met, and then we had lots of time to chat. And so let's start with the way we start with every interview, which is, what's your first memory of sewing?
My mom has always sewn, and in our house in Shreveport, where I was born, she had a little closet under the stairs. Like, you know how the stairs slant? Uh-huh. She had a little closet in there that is where she sewed. And she made all kind of beautiful things. And she would let me sit in there and touch everything and play. And she never, ever fussed. And I think that's why I grew up loving it. Because I've talked to many people who say, I would love to sew, but I got yelled at when I did this. Or I would love to sew, but my mom always corrected me and I had to do it over again. And she never did that. It was always, okay, that's perfect, just the way it is.
And that's the way you are when you teach. It's really interesting.
And like, so, because you have to have fun with it. Otherwise, what's the point?
Yeah.
If it's not fun.
And did she quilt at all? Or did she?
She does now.
Yeah, she does
now. She didn't. She was clothing. She would look at things, you know, in a Neiman Marcus catalog, and she's like, oh, that's a dress. And then she would make that dress. And so she did mostly clothing. Oh, do I have it in here? Where is she? Bertha. Oh, is that Bertha? I've got to find Bertha for you, because Bertha is, she took a class in the 60s, and they made my mom's form the actual form.
Oh, really?
And it was my size until I had kids. And then, now she just, you can see Bertha has fabric just laying all over her now.
That's really great. I love it.
So we love Bertha. We'll never get rid of Bertha. But, so mom would just put stuff on there and create these incredible garments. And people always, she just looked great. And she just passed it on.
That's amazing. What do you think the difference is between sewing and quilting? Like making clothing and quilting? Do you think it's a different thing?
It is a totally different thing. Sewing, if you're making clothing, it has to be precise. Not that quilting doesn't, but sewing, you know, you can't have buckles and bumps and you can't stack and whack. If you whack it off, it's not going to fit. And I quilt more of a stack and whack kind of thing. Like, oh, it's a little long. Oh, I'll just cut that off. But sewing is, it's gratifying in that, you know, when you make something that fits and you can wear it, it really feels good. But it also can be, for me, very frustrating when it doesn't fit, when it doesn't come out exactly right. The fabric doesn't drape the way you thought it was going to. I mean, you see Project Runway. It's, you know, it's exactly like that. Yeah. You have a vision in your head and you come home and you cut everything out and there's my trash pile of the dress that didn't work. You know, it just, sometimes it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
And when it doesn't work in quilting, I never get discouraged. I just add more fabric or I just change the pattern. But if it doesn't work in sewing, I fold it up and I put it in a pile and I usually leave it and then it'll grow into being something else, like a doll dress for Sarah or mm-hmm. something else.
Yeah.
But it's quilting, I never feel like I make a mistake. I just change what I was doing.
Really interesting.
I don't know. That's how.
So when did you start sewing? And when did you start quilting?
I started sewing when I was probably about 6. And I got one of these machines that I tell everybody not to buy. But my mom got me one for Christmas. Mm-hmm. I think I was 5 or 6. And it actually moved and pulled the fabric through. And so I really thought I was sewing. I don't remember it making stitches, but it moved it, and I thought I was mm-hmm. sewing. Then the bicentennial year, which was, you know, 1976, I was in 6th grade, and we had a competition at school. Everybody had to do something that was handmade. And you could make jelly, you could do whatever you wanted to do, but it had to be something kind of like what they would have done in colonial times, I suppose. You know, how would they? Mm-hmm. So I made a quilt. And that was my first quilting project, and I did applique on it, and I loved it. It was not perfect. It was bumpy and lumpy, but I loved it, and I got 2nd place, and that was the beginning. I've never entered anything in a contest since, but that was my, really, that was, I think, the only ribbon I've ever won in my entire life was 2nd place for that. So that's how I got started, and then I didn't quilt again until at least I don't remember. Until I was pregnant for my son, I was teaching 1st grade, second at that time, teaching 2nd grade, and I had each one of the kids draw a picture of what they thought a baby would want to look at. And then they used fabric crayons, and they colored them, and I ironed them onto fabric and quilted around them and made a wall hanging over his crib.
Oh, that's so cool.
And then I did one for my daughter, and then got pregnant for my 3rd, and he never got one. That was a long story, but he never got one. And so then I was quilting then. I'm still sewing. I loved making clothing for, like, to wear to school, kind of like Miss Frizzle. Like, if we were doing mountains, I would have a dress made out of mountain fabric, you know, that kind of stuff. So I enjoy doing that.
And how long did you teach?
Oh, 25 years.
Amazing.
Yeah, librarian, teacher, you know, all the... everything. Did some admissions for a little while. But quilting really came about where I got hooked on the quilting bug, I guess. Probably about before Katrina. So everything is judged by that. But I think it was probably about 2 or 3 years before Katrina I started. And then I joined a guild, which really propels you into a different realm.
Yeah, tell me about your guild experience.
It's so much fun to be with people who love doing what you love doing. I'm not really a group kind of person. Like, mm-hmm. I don't like to exercise in a group. I don't normally like to do things groupy. I like to just do my thing up here in my sewing room. But being with people who love what you're doing and are so much better at it, and they share all their knowledge and they share everything with you. And if you're working on something and you say, I'm making an I Spy quilt, the next thing you know, you've got envelopes in your mailbox full of little pieces of fabric that they think you can use in your quilt. Or, I don't know. It's just quilters tend to be very giving. And I think that the whole idea of quilting and giving go together. Because when you make one, you want to give somebody warmth and comfort And so that's how my quilt guild is. They're very warm and giving and wanting to share their knowledge and share their things and share time together.
And what do you do in the guild? How often do you meet?
We meet. They're all probably listening going, right. Wait a second, you haven't been in 2 months. and I'm missing this week too. We meet once a month on Wednesday nights. And we kind of consciously made it so that we could never be too big to meet at people's houses. We wanted to be able to meet at people's houses instead of having to go to a, hall or something.
So how many are in your guild, do you think?
Our cap is 15, and I think we're at 12 right now. And we try and make it so every time we meet, someone is assigned with teaching something. And it can be a binding method, which one of the girls did recently, and I came right home and put it on one of my quilts and loved it. Or it could be a new square pattern. Then they also do, usually every year we pick one thing that we do every month. So there was one, we did strips, 5.5-inch strips, and everybody shared strips and we choose a color. So like this month would be yellow, next month would be purple, the next month. And then people give us ideas, like what to do with strips. What do you do with 2.5-inch strips? What do you do with 5.5-inch strips? And so we get patterns to use. And a lot of them end up going into donation quilts or charity quilts. And that's another thing the guilds are real big into, quilts of valor. Or we've got a group right now from a bigger guild that I belong to where we do sewing retreat. And one of the girls had breast cancer. And she started just giving out quilts to other cancer survivors or cancer patients to wear while they're getting their treatments and their cold. And I mean, that is gone. It's like gangbusters. They're just giving them out fast as they can get them. It's great. And from kids to adults, men and women, all people going through cancer treatments, and they give it to them. So guilds have a lot of different hats they wear, but giving would be the word I would use to describe my guild.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Do you think that that means that there should be kind of a special, like I'm talking a little bit about copy right now. So one of the questions is, where do you get your patterns? Should mm-hmm. you pay for your patterns? You know, is there a commercial aspect to a guild? Sort of how do we understand? Should there be a license? So how do you get the pattern? Like, tell me a little bit more about how you choose patterns and
usually
what your thoughts are.
Usually it's from online uh-huh. and not, and this, my guild is really, they don't give away, like if I buy a pattern for a purse and I bring the purse and I show everybody my quilted purse or bag, and then they write down what the pattern is and they buy it because we feel like that's somebody's livelihood. You're taking, so if I were to make copies of that pattern and just hand it out, then that, and we're very conscious about that. Like it makes everybody very nervous to think that they've borrowed or taken something that.
Because why?
Because like I said, you know, somebody created that pattern. It's their mental knowledge, I guess, is the way we look at it. And so if I take my $15 pattern and make copies of it for everybody, then even if I'm teaching it, you know, I have everybody buys it. Mm-hmm. And then we all work from that same pattern. But then they own it too, and then they have it to use for future.
Right.
I don't know. It just, and I don't know if that's right or wrong. But the ones that we give out, like we'll make copies of, is a free, like Bonnie Hunter has a site where she does lots of scrappy things, and those are all free. And we know they're free, and so then making copies of it is not a big deal. But if somebody's paid for it, we definitely honor that it's been paid for. Okay. And so I don't know. I don't know if it's right or wrong, but to us it feels right not to.
Right.
Jip the person out who came up with the idea.
Yeah. Now, what about the shop? So you guys have a lot of classes there. Same situation?
Same situation, right. What happens is if we want to teach something, a quilt, and it's a pattern, one we just did, it's called Esplanade. Anyway, they ordered several copies of this pattern. And then when you sign up, you got the pattern with the class. And so it would have been easy just to copy it. You know, it was one little piece of paper, but somebody came up with it, and it seems a shame not to honor there. But I don't know if that's right or wrong. I'm not sure. But that's how we do it. And if it's a PDF pattern, when the person signs up, we put their email in and get it. Again, it's paid for through the class, but they get a PDF link to print it out themselves.
Are you able then, you buy them wholesale or you buy them?
That I don't know. Yeah. I don't know how Emma, I think she gets it wholesale when she's buying bulk or multiple of them. Uh-huh. But I don't do the buyings. I'd have to ask her that.
Interesting. Well, that's really interesting. So what are your favorite things to have? So we were talking downstairs about fabric and that you like fabric. So tell me more about your love of fabric and how that influences what you do with quilting.
Well, my quilt guild calls it Gigi fabric because they think that I put things together that are just absolutely like, oh, I can't even believe you put that stuff together. And that's what I love to do. And I really don't care if anybody else likes it. I like the way it always turns out. I'll go to different fabric stores and I'll pick up, you know, a yard here and a yard there. Then when I get home, I'm like, oh, all these go together. And I'll just put it together.
You like the putting together.
I like the putting together. I like bigger pieces so that the fabric is the star of the show as opposed to the quilt pattern itself. Some quilt patterns are so intricate and they're beautiful. But the pieces are so small that you're really just getting a color sense or a value sense as opposed to getting, like, this is the pretty fabric. Right. And I like the pretty fabric.
Right.
So I do bigger pieces so you can see.
And do you do olive? Do you also quilt? Do you just send them out?
I have. I'm not good at it. So I have done it, but it's not... And I've taken classes on free motion quilting, and I've done online classes free motion quilting, and I'm just not good at it yet. But I'm still practicing.
Yeah, I'm sort of in this. I don't know if you can. I don't know if everybody can get good at it. That's what. So I'm not. My penmanship is terrible. I'm not an artist, and I'm really determined to see if I devote the time.
Right.
Can you get good at it, or is it just like? No, you can't.
Like, I can't paint.
I don't know yet.
Right, I can't, or I can paint, I can't draw.
Yeah.
So, you know, can I teach myself that?
Oh, we're going to, hold on just a second. We're going to pause for just a second. Okay, so we're back. So once you finish a top, where do you send it to? What do you do?
There's a couple of people in town that do quilting at their homes with long arm machines. My husband is fascinated with long arm machines.
Me too.
Fascinated. I love them. I had a friend in town who had one, and she would let us go and use hers. We'd pay her for the time to use it, and I loved it. But they're so darn expensive,
and
they take up so much room that it would be, you know. And I've got, there's some girls in my quilt guild who have them, and they just said, I don't need a dining room table. I need a quilt. And so they have them in their dining rooms, and they do the most beautiful work, and it's fascinating to me, but I've only done of my own. I've done one on a long arm and loved it, and then the rest I've done on my domestic machine, you know, just regular machine.
Interesting. So you also had a business for a while, didn't you? Tell us a little bit about owning a business and tell us a little bit more about what the business was.
The business was called So Fabulous, and my business partner and I started it as a place for people to come learn how to sew. No, we don't do your mending. We will teach you how to mend, kind of thing. And it seemed to us as if there was a resurgence of a demographic of, you know, I say kids because I'm old, but kids, you know, middle ages between, you know, 11 to 45 who really wanted to learn how to sew and they missed the boat. By the end of the 70s, 80s, all home ec, all sewing was taken out of the schools. And all the rage was having computers in the classrooms. No more shop, no more hands-on work. And I was a big proponent of that not happening. I felt like there's always going to be kids in our society and adults who learn by doing and wanting to make things. And that's what they want to do for a living. And so we were excited to get back into teaching people how to do this for themselves. And that it was hard. It was hard. It was hard because when people wanted to come and sew after work or on the weekends was when we wanted, you know, to be with our families or, you know, that. So it was hard to find times that were good for people to be able to come and do it. That was a difficult issue. It's a hard way to make a living. It's better if you're not selling goods, you're only selling services. You know, and we had a place and we were paying rent. It was lovely to have a spot where you had 8 machines set up and there was room to cut out, but you're paying rent and it takes a lot of sewing classes to pay the rent.
A lot.
So, because we just, I mean, you can't charge that much for sewing classes. And so we come, after 3 years, we realized this is silly. We can go do this in people's homes or they can come to our home. So we did it more in terms of, you know, that. And so my business partner, she still does it a lot more than I do because obviously I'm working at the other store now. But she does it through her home. And then in the summertime, she goes to a local school because school is out, and she uses their parish hall to teach the summer camp.
Oh,
and so that worked out really well. Yeah.
So tell me a little bit more about Uptown Needleworks.
Uptown Needleworks has a lot going on. It has fabrics and...
It's on magazine. And it's right next to the bead shop, which I think is really awesome because it makes it kind of a crafty moment.
It does. And next to the bakery.
Which is really good.
So it's a crafty, yummy moment.
Right, exactly. So every time we go, I'm always like, okay, well, I get to go to the bakery first.
Well, and that's what we start each class with. Okay, so during break in a few minutes, y'all can go next door and get coffee and a little something to eat. And their food is just unbelievably delicious. But, you know, Emma is one of these people that... She is so creative. Her brain never stops thinking of the next thing. What can I do next? What can I do next? And my favorite is, right, she just came up with a pattern. She comes up with her own patterns. She came up with a pattern for a little house that looks like a little shotgun. It's all over the city. Mm-hmm. And free motion quilting all over the little panels on the side. But the house opens and closes so you can put like a gift card inside or a treasure for a little kid. And it can be a gift box. And then she came up with a pattern for a chicken, an adorable chicken, or maybe it's a rooster, but whatever it might be, it's a chicken or a rooster. I'm not sure if it has a gobbler. And then that make it a rooster. I think it has a gobbler. So anyway, she came up with her own pattern for that. And yeah, somebody came in and was oohing and aahing. And I said, you know, I love chickens and I love houses, but I would never come up with the idea to do this. She made some prayer flags, that had, you know, hand stitching and hand embroidery all over.
What's a prayer flag?
Her prayer flags are made out of felt, and it probably has about 8-inch squares across it, attached by lace or attached by whatever you want. And then you, based on the person you're giving it to or making it for, you put things that are important to them. So it might be, if it's a couple for a shower, they're getting married, you put the couple in the middle and then things that are important to them, you embroider around it. And on the back, you have little pockets to put little thoughts and prayers, you know, in the back to give to them. It could be for a baptism or a christening for a baby and maybe things you wish for them. You just embroider and then you hang it on the mantle or you hang it in the baby's room and they come out. Well, hers come out beautiful. I haven't made one yet, but hers are absolutely beautiful. And so we have quilting fabrics, but we also do clothing.
You do everything. It's a small shop.
It's a small shop.
And it's got everything in it.
She does encaustic. I don't have my sister's encaustic, but it's downstairs. I'll show you. Encaustic is where you do the waxing over the color painting, and they do fabric dyeing. She's got some beautiful dyed fabrics right now, teaching people how to do. The G's Bend quilt is coming up. That class is coming up. So she hand dyes her fabrics to put in her G's Bend quilts.
Tell if people are listening, what is G's Bend?
G's Bend is a group of women who made quilts out of necessity, you know, years and years, hundreds of years ago, and collected them. And it would just be that you'd hand it down, and this is what they used to cover the window to keep it warm inside or even cover the floor. And I think it was in the late 70s, early 80s, someone was driving by and saw them hanging on the line, and they are truly look pieces of art. They look like they should be hanging in a museum, and so that's what they did. They took them, put them in a museum, and it went off like gangbusters. I mean, people were just mesmerized by how they look like modern quilts, even though it was just, here's a piece of a jean, and here's a piece of a shirt. Let me just keep adding to this. And so So Emma went and took a class with the ladies of G's Bend and learned a technique it almost looks like crazy quilting because the pieces, no pieces are the same, and you just keep adding to this kind of crazy quilt looking thing and make squares that you then turn into a quilt. And she'll be teaching that class coming up to teach the technique. It's a way of thinking. It's not even, you don't measure anything. You just, what do you have? A piece of scrap. Here, put that in there.
Sounds awesome.
And it's a lot of different textures, too. Like I said, it can be jeans with canvas, with cotton, with polyester, whatever happens to be available.
That's very cool.
Yeah. It's going to be fun.
So, is there other things that you'd like to chat about? So, when do you sew? Do you sew at a particular time, or?
No. It's, I sew when I can. I would spend, if I could treat it like a job, I would come up here in the morning at 9, and I would not come out until 5, and I would stay up here, and I would just sew. My husband is the most supportive person in the world, and loves, you know, getting things and helping, and he's also kind of a science guy, so when I get something new, he reads the manual, and he's like, oh, you know you can do this, and you know you can do that, and this is how, so I have this extra help support system to help me, because I'm not a manual reader. I just start doing it, and then I'm like, wow, I wonder if I could do this, and then I read the manual. So he does, but I'm looking at my AccuQuilt, you know, just like, I would spend a whole day just cutting stuff out to applique and then having it all ready and stored up, ready to go. But again, life is not like that. Yeah. And grandchildren get sick and, you know, people need things other than me sewing. So,
Do you have, do you do things by project, or do you like having a big stash, or sort of how do you?
Well, I kind of have a stash.
Yeah.
I kind of have a stash. I do have that pile over there, that's all stacked up in order of things that need to happen. And I had on the table when you came in that the Christmas pillowcases for my granddaughters have to happen because Christmas is coming. So that was today. I'm going to get those knocked out today because I need to get their names on them because I like to embroider their names on them. Then I have a couple of orders that I've got to fill, so some European pillows and things like that. So I have people, I do that kind of stuff too. You know, I don't take all jobs, but when somebody calls me and says, hey, can you make these pillows? If I have time, I say yes. Well, this poor lady asked me. And at the time, I had time, but it's been 2 weeks now, so I need to get those done. I'm trying to think what else. You know, but free time sewing, like, let's sit down and make a quilt. I go to retreat twice a year.
Yeah, tell me about that.
Oh, it's just so lovely. And I try to go twice a year. I don't always make it. But in January and in August, we go from Monday through Thursday, and it sounds silly, but it is the most fun thing. We have this giant room all set up. We each get an 8-foot table.
Where do you go?
It's outside of St. Francisville. And all you do is sew, and you can sew whatever you want. One time I spent the whole time making aprons for a restaurant here in town because I had to have that finished.
Mm-hmm.
But it was loads more fun making aprons there with all my friends than sitting up in this room just doing it all by myself. But we have cutting stations set up, and we have ironing stations set up, and everybody works on different things, and you walk around the room and you get inspired. I get so inspired when I'm with these ladies, and just watching what they can do and how they do it. And we're all so different. Some people do, you know, heavy dark things and it looks beautiful, and others do these bright modern quilts and it's beautiful. And some people are making bags, and some people are making, and there's always something new to learn. There's always something new to learn.
So do you think retreat and gathering is an important part of quilting community?
I do. I think with YouTube and with the internet, some people might feel like, I can do this by myself.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're with people who do this and do it so much, I don't want to say so much better, because I can do some things that I like what I do, but so they do things so much better, and I may never make the same kind of quilt they do, but there's something inspirational about being around people that can do things differently than you do, but yet still the same type of thing.
Yeah, it seems to like it almost makes you better by just being with them.
Yes.
I don't know why that is, right?
Right. And then you see things that, like maybe those rulers that we're going to talk about in a second.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I saw that on Facebook, but if I bring that to quilt retreat and show them, I mean, if they've never seen it,
yeah,
or they saw it, but they were like, I don't want to make the jump, and I don't want to buy them, and I go in there and I do a demo, you know, it's so much fun to see a new tool.
Now, are the people that you're going to retreat with the same that people that are in the guild?
Partly. It's much bigger. There's more. There's probably 28 to 35 people that usually go on a retreat.
Yes. And how can we ask just a little bit about sort of the cost of it? Because I'm curious sort of how...
It always varies. Uh-huh. This works out that you can get a single room and it costs more. And I'm going to throw numbers out. I'm not...
Yeah, this is okay,
not
but just to get a sense of it.
Okay. Some people go on Sunday and they pay a little extra. But let's just say round numbers. I think it's almost... like $280 if you have a single room from Monday through Thursday.
That's really reasonable.
And that includes your bedroom, and they're clean, nice bedrooms, and your meals. You get, which is the biggest treat of all. You would think we've never eaten before, but we're all ladies who have been taking care of their families forever, and having really somebody like come in, and she comes in and she's like, ding-a-ling-a-ling. And we're all like, it's lunchtime. And then at lunchtime, when it's over, we all start thinking, what do you think dinner is? What do you think? Do you think it's going to be, you know, this or that? And so we talk about dinner for another 30 minutes. And then it's just so much fun. And so I would say $280 to $300 for the single. Then if you have a roommate, which most of us do, you get a discount. And so maybe it's $225 if you've got
that's
a roommate.
Really great.
And, it's two double beds or two queen size beds. Nice. But it's, the facility is so lovely for sewing. I mean, it's set up. They really do a great job of making it.
And is this a place that has quilts retreats all the time?
I think they have more. I think it started, I think Cindy found the president of my quilt guild and the president of this, the Happy Hearts Quilters is what we call our guild that goes to retreat. I think Cindy may have started it there with Janie and some girls. That now other guilds go there, but it's a the Judson Baptist Retreat Center, and it's, they do everything. They have summer camps there, so it's made for group setting. You know, they have this. It looks like it was a motel at one time. The rooms are there, and then they've built this giant hall that you can set up the tables, and it's beautiful, like deer are outside the window in the morning when we wake up kind of thing.
That sounds great.
There's not an internet, and which is fine, and there's not good phone reception, so it's so cute. After dinner, all these ladies go stand out in this field holding their phones and like, yes, we're having a great time talking to, you know, to their family at home. Okay, you know. And then in the summertime, in August, they have these big bugs. So you're like, okay, I can only talk for a second. These things are bouncing off my leg. And it's like, you know, I can't stay out in this field much longer. And these giant grasshopper things that freak me out.
So it really is a retreat because you're getting away from the world.
Yes, you get away from the world. You really do. And you get so inspired. I come back just so inspired by them, and just happy. I just come home happy. Not that I'm not happy already, but you just come back, and it's cute because my family is adorable about it. Ever since I started going, they they come over. If they're not here, they come from their apartments over. What'd you finish, Mom? What'd you do? What'd you come back with? You know, and they get so excited about what I've done, and so that makes me even more inspired. So,
that's very sweet. Yeah. Well, anything else you want to talk about? So you're part of our quilting army,
yes,
right?
Yes,
I am. I'm super psyched. And do you have any ideas about what we should be doing or like what this project should be?
Any ideas? Well, I just like spreading the quilting world, the word around the world, because I feel like it has, for some, a very negative, like grandmother cardigan sweater.
Yeah, it's so not that.
Yeah, so not that. And it's,
I mean, it can be that too, right. But it's bigger than that.
It's bigger than that. And it's traditional, it's modern, it's everything. And the two quilts that I'm sharing with you, I feel like one of them is very traditional and one of them is more modern. And it's like, you can do whatever you want to do. And it's such a great creative outlet. I've seen stories about where women have gone into prisons and gotten to where they're teaching quilting to these men. And it's an artistic outlet that if you're not a painter, you're not, it lets people express themselves in such a different way. And it's fun. You can do it as much or as little as you want. You can do just the piecing and send it away to have it quilted. You can do all of it. You can add embellishments. You can embroider on it. You can applique on it, and it makes it so it makes it your own, and no two are alike.
Right. That's awesome.
Right. Even if you and I did the exact same pattern, right, same fabric, it still wouldn't be the same.
Do you think there's any problem with people selling quilts? Like if you...
If I use a pattern and then sell it? No. That I don't think is a problem.
Yeah.
And usually it's stated on there, okay, if I were to sell them in the store,
yeah,
they'll ask, please tell what pattern you used.
Yeah.
So like if I'm selling that and I use, you know, the Esplanade pattern, let's say, or something, then they ask, please just mention, and they even say it that way, please mention it. They don't say you have to. They just say, right, please mention which pattern you use.
What about patterns that you use for sewing clothing? Do you think it's okay to make the clothing and then say sell it to somebody or sell it on Etsy or something like that if you take
again,
a pattern?
Again, they use, if like the PDF patterns that I've downloaded, it'll say, please let them know it's our pattern. I think they just want their name out there so somebody else wants to use it also.
Interesting.
But I have not been selling clothing. I make it for my granddaughters and I make it for myself and my daughter, but I don't necessarily sell those. We do sell things in the store that we use our patterns for and sell them.
Mm-hmm.
It's an adorable little jacket right now that Emma's been making in all different sizes for little children. And we sell the pattern too. And so I think that's okay. I don't think, I don't. But again, I'm not the lawyer.
That's okay. Interesting. I bought this great, I think you must have made, somebody in your shop made them for one of the crews. They were aprons. Were those your aprons? No. They were aprons and they were Doctor Who aprons. I think they were
I didn't see this.
Could have been like for Chewbacca or something. But it was, oh my gosh. And it's got all the little, the fabric is all Doctor Who, and it's an apron, so I bought one of those for the kid because it was perfect. She's a baker and she's a Doctor Who person.
So. Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've been talking about being in Chewbacca. We go every year and we dress up, but we've not been in it. And we're like, we've got to figure out, we've got to sign up to be in it and get our costumes going.
Be really cool. And Chewbacca's is one of, for people who, so we have a lot of parades here. So it's part of Mardi Gras.
Right.
And it's one of the parades, and it's more of like a Chewbacca's being from Star Wars.
Or any kind of intergalactic.
Yeah, it's kind of like general kind of sci-fi nerdy kind of thing, right?
And when I say that, I've never, I shouldn't admit this on air, but I've never seen a Star Wars movie. But I make all the costumes for my family when we dress up to go and do.
That's really great.
And like my daughter was going to be Rey. And so I was like, oh, sure, I'll do that. So I just, you know, Googled pictures of Rey and made a costume. And I went, oh, this is a great Rey costume.
So do you think there's any problem doing that? Do you see, like, any problem, like, finding a picture of a costume or...
I don't think so, because it's not... again, it's going to be my own take on it. I went to the thrift store and got, like, you know, the belt and the things to go with it and stuff like that. And that, I mean, in essence, it was... similar but not the same.
Right. But let's say even if it was similar, because we try our best to make it similar, right?
It's, right.
It just doesn't look that way because we can't quite get there, right? Now it's like, so do you think it's okay? Like, you know, your kids like, your grandkids like Sesame Street or they like Star Wars and you make them a costume.
I think that's fine.
Yeah,
I
why?
I think that's fine. I think it's different when you have movies and things that have come out, and you're replicating. It's sort of like it's out there. And it's nobody has, you know, the costumist didn't say, I copyright this costume.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, I guess it's not copyrighted. Some of these things that you get, it looks like it's copy. I mean, it makes me nervous because it's, do not use this for any other purpose other than your own soul use.
So we see that the distinction is like, if you're making it for your personal use and you're making it for your kids and your family, that nobody seems to, I mean, there are some that I'm sure would care, but in general,
no one
we see it as non-commercial personal use and that it's just part of like loving the thing that you're really into. And it's, you know, free advertising in some way, right?
Right.
That you're running around being a particular character and that only when you get to selling it, maybe sometimes Etsy, but even more just commercial use, that if you were taking your version of it and selling it at Sears or at Dillard's, there'd be a problem.
Right.
Does that seem to sort of make sense to you?
That's sort of the way I interpret it.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like even on Etsy, because if you go from Pinterest to Etsy, there's so much overlap. There's so much, and who's to say, You know, I invented that little hoodie, you know, ear mm-hmm. warmer thing.
Yeah.
Well, you know, somebody... I don't know how you say who actually right. was the first one to come up with that.
Now, and some say that Etsy's even okay. It, you know, Etsy's kind of this weird area, murky area. But some say, well, look, they're buying the fabric at a shop.
Right.
And they're spending a lot of their time. It's not efficient. It's not industrialized. They're not right. getting the fabric wholesale. And they're not having, you know, employing a bunch of people to make right. them. So... how much damage could it do? Right. So again, that it's more non-commercial, even though it's on Etsy. That it's not commercial.
I mean, it's somebody like up in a room like me.
Exactly. And how many pillow Star Wars pillowcases can you make? Sure. You know, there's only just a finite right. set of time, and that you're already.
You're not going to dominate the market with what you're doing in your.
No, and then you're not even paying. I mean, you're still paying a lot. I mean, the fabric's still costing you some. So you're not making a ton of money. So yeah. I think that's what we're starting to see with these interviews is that there's that kind of, it's still a gray area.
It's a monetary thing too.
It's all about the money.
And I think if I took a pattern that I got off of, that's Etsy, sent it to Japan and had 1,000 of them made for yeah. nothing and then brought them back here and tried to sell them around, well, then that would be
really
wrong.
Different, right? Because it's really commercialized, right. industrialized use of that right. pattern. The other thing I see on Etsy all the time are, I look at it and like, I'm really into hexies right now, way into hexies. I'm not sure why, but just okay. love them. So, you know, I'll see a pattern and I know exactly how to do it now that I've seen it.
Yes.
I also sort of see that there's a market of, these are all public domain image, like it's right. a log cabin or it's something else, but somebody doesn't know how to do that. So
right.
the benefit is not that it's under copyright, because it's not,
right.
But that they're provided instructions mm-hmm. and they learn and mm-hmm. all of that. So what you're paying for isn't the copyright, it's the learning, the recipe, the
right.
the directions.
Right.
So I think that's really interesting too.
Yes, I agree with that totally. And I think that's one of the things, it's one thing for me, like I said, if I were to bring a quilted bag to retreat and say, look, ladies, I made this in Knit a Cute Bag. Here's the pattern that I used. They all copy down the name of the pattern and go home to order it. They are going to need those instructions, just right. like I needed them originally,
right.
for the most part. I yeah. mean, you're right. Sometimes you can look at something and say, well, that looks like a 2.5-inch square with a 4.5-inch whatever.
Right.
I can do that.
Right.
But for the most part, you do. It's more comforting to me to have that set of instructions so that I know that I'm doing it correctly. And then after that, I can kind of wing it. But. Yeah.
It's interesting. I also think that the pattern booklets is an interesting phenomenon because you're like, oh, I want that booklet with all the pretty colors and the way it is. And so that sort of encourages people to, and sewers and quilters like pretty things. Uh-huh. So it's, I think that that also
yes.
you know.
Well, I printed out a lot. You can see over here. I have clothing patterns. These are my PDF
Oh,
patterns.
Wow. So you've got a cabinet of
okay, this
a
is
file
all,
cabinet. That's awesome.
This is
look at that.
My vintage ones.
Like oh, my gosh.
Four. But then these are the ones that I print out from, like, and they're all, like you said, I do them in black and white to save uh-huh. on printer ink.
Right?
I don't do them in color. Uh-huh. But they're not very pretty when you do
no.
them.
So how do you get, okay, so we'll end this in just a second, but how, when you use a pattern, how do you get it back into the envelope?
I iron it.
You iron it.
Mm-hmm. I iron it and make it flat.
And then do you fold it over and keep ironing
it
until it makes it?
And just make it flat.
Ah, see,
yes.
We've learned some very important
but
things.
But I have some of them, let's see, maybe down here. I keep them in Ziploc bags. Once it's been cut
yeah.
and I have maybe some pieces or something that I've done differently, because sometimes I'll make a muslin,
uh-huh.
and so I'll put it in the a Ziploc bag.
Cool. Favorite sewing machine? Do you have one?
They're all listening.
I know. They're all your children.
All these children.
You've okay. got a Bernina and you've got a baby. Is okay. it a baby? A brother?
Yes. It's my. I love this machine. This is probably my go-to machine. This Johnny bought this for me. I mean, it's probably been 12 years. It's been a while. It does embroidery and I just love this machine.
It's nice. It's nice and big.
Mm-hmm. So it's got a good throat area.
Yeah.
It has an automatic cutter. I love that. It has memory so that if the electricity should go out in the middle of doing embroidery, it'll remember where you are.
We live in New Orleans.
Yeah, that happens kind of a lot here.
It really does.
This is my industrial machine, my Juki, and I use that for making aprons for some of the restaurants and the chefs.
I have two Jukis. I love them.
I love my Juki. I do. I love that machine. But it's different. I love them for all different reasons. My Bernina, which you see over there, it says Sebastian sewing machine. That's my 8-year-old grandson. He's counted that one as his own.
Nice.
He loves to sew right there.
That's great.
That is a workhorse. That machine is so, and her name is Mildred Edna, because I got it from a friend her mother's name was Mildred Edna. And so we call that Mildred Edna. I do
Very
like to
sweet.
Name the machine. And then this serger is phenomenal.
It's a Viking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I can't say that other Husqvarna. Mm-hmm. And then this is brand new. I just got this last week.
Really?
Yes. It's a cover stitch machine. And that's used.
What is a cover stitch machine?
It does clothing. I'll show you an example in a second. On like a knit shirt. Yeah. Do you have your thing showing?
It
serges it and then does the double stitch at the top.
On the top.
And you can do decorative with it. So it's really nice for knits.
Oh, that's very cool. Exciting.
And it's very neat.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, anything else before we end this introductory interview?
I don't think so.
Well, I'm hoping that we just have lots of fun and we do lots of really
Me
great
too.
Stuff.
Me too.
Cool. Awesome.
So. Awesome.
Thanks
Thank
so
you.
Much.
All right.
So that was Gigi Bai. She is so much fun. She's been helping strategize and think about things behind the scenes. She is working with me on thinking through samples we get of patterns and tools to really understand and think through what you do with them. And she's just fun. So I hope you get to know her more, and I hope you enjoyed the interview. So this is Elizabeth Townsend-Gard. You've been listening to Just Wanna Quilt, a research podcast coming out of Tulane University Law School. We want to hear from you. Join our army, our quilting army. Go to our Facebook page. Suggest people to be interviewed. Suggest yourself to be interviewed. We are excited to hear from you. But most importantly, I hope you get a chance to quilt today.